Can't get enough wrestling talk? Well, check out Ringside Rant with top guys RJ and Justin, the kings of ranting. The new shows drop each Friday morning at 9 Eastern, and it'll take you back to the good old days of pro wrestling, but also the not so good days. Ringside Rant is available on all podcast platforms, as well as full press coverage, Wrestling with Johnners Network, and the Shining Wizards Network. You can also follow the show on Twitter at @_ringsiderant. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows drop Friday morning at 9 Eastern. That's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. A couple of top guys doing top guy stuff. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows Friday mornings at 9 Eastern.
It's Friday. It's 9 a.m. You know what that means. Another great episode of the Ringside Rant is with you this week. And introducing your host, he is Cincinnati's favorite son, J.D. Justin Davis. And from Rochester, New York, he is the man with the magical voice, RJ. And as always, welcome to Ranters Nation. It's that time of the week again. It's your boys. I'm the man with the magical voice, RJ. He is, what, a couple heart attacks shy of a Baker's dozen at this point, Justin, after that game last week?
Hey, we're used to it. That's the way we win football games anymore, I guess.
Emotional damage.
But as long as we're winning, I don't care. And for the first time since 1989, the Cincinnati fucking Bengals are going to the Super Bowl, everybody. And I cannot be more excited. No one's given us a chance to win, but they haven't gave us a chance to win the last 2 weeks either. And we saw how that went. And also, Jeff Jarrett just guaranteed a Bengals victory because he picked the Rams. And we know what happens when Jeff Jarrett hitches his wagon to something. It goes right in the fucking ditch.
Well, I thought that was Ric Flair.
Well, that too, I think. But I'm sure Flair's going to be a Rams fan. You know, he'll probably be in there in the stadium wearing blue and gold. All of a sudden, he's a Rams fan now.
Well, he was a big Tom Brady fan, and we know what happened with him. He officially retired, thank God. So once the weather breaks, my wife and I will be throwing a Tom Brady retirement party.
Thank you. Fuck you. Bye.
For anybody and everybody that wants to make the trek out here to Rochester.
The Bengals did something the Bills couldn't do, which is stop Patrick Mahomes in overtime.
You just made the list.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to say something about that. I was just going to let it go until you forgot. But yeah, it was funny that you follow Josh Allen on social media. I forgot. I think it was Payne or something. He just
the Chiefs won the coin flip, and he said Payne.
Yeah,
it ain't Payne for us, bro. Because we got a defense, unlike the Bills, apparently.
Apparently. And I'm saying, then we got, what's the news coming out of Buffalo?
And we got a new kicker.
Yeah, right. We got a kicker, too. We got a pretty damn good kicker in Tyler Bass, but.
He's not a stone-cold killer like Money Mac McPherson, baby.
Jesus Christ. See? Jesus Christ.
Who's Money Mike? I don't even know who that is. I just know Money Mac.
I'm sorry, Michael. Actually, no, I'm not. I'm not. We should all like act like we're surprised or something, because you sure as shit know we're not being surprised with this crap. But no, it's just it's interesting to see. I was planning on having Brian Daboll be signed somewhere as a head coach. Rightfully so. Great offensive coordinator. I thought he was going to be gone last year, but he got hired over in there with the Giants. And it's just been this dumpster fire of this Brian Flores garbage that we've seen all week pretty much with his. And I'm not saying garbage is a bad thing, but it's just, you hate to see it because it's really putting a damper on the Super Bowl, the Pro Bowl. And like I said, I'm not discrediting what he went through. I'm not discrediting anything. I'm just saying,
no, neither am I. And I'll say this. if owners in the NFL were paying head coaches to lose games on purpose, I don't know why that's not a bigger deal. I mean, we're talking about balls being deflated and people right. are losing their goddamn minds, but they not saying shit about owners paying coaches to yeah. lose. And if that happened, I don't know how those owners aren't forced to sell their teams. How right. is Pete Rose not in the Hall of Fame for betting on his team to win?
Yeah.
And these guys are trying to
paying you off to lose. And not even that, it's just not creating each and every coach equally. That's where I, and we're not going to get too far into the weeds on this because this is a wrestling podcast, but just to get out in the open, like every coach should be considered equal when they're interviewing. They shouldn't have to be considered, oh, we're interviewing because we have to. No, you should interview somebody because you want to.
Yeah, it looks like the Giants had already figured out that they were going to hire Brian Daboll, and then they're mm-hmm. just bringing Brian Flores in to check off their Rooney list, mm-hmm. you know, reliability. Right. I agree with Mr. Flores on that, and it looks like that's a fact, judging by the text that he got from Bill Belichick accidentally, who he thought was
oh my god, that texting. Was hilarious.
I mean, if that's the case, that needs to be looked into as well. Mm-hmm. Because that's bullshit. If you already know who you're hiring and you're just bringing a guy in and putting him through the rigmarole for no good goddamn reason, that's an issue to me as well. I think, you know, there's going to be, I hope we can get through these next 2 weeks and have a good Super Bowl and have a good game, but there's going to be a lot to talk about in the future of the NFL as far as these allegations goes, I believe.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting off season for the NFL in general. Speaking of coaching
hiring, yeah. I see that Kevin O'Connell, the Rams offensive coordinator,
Minnesota.
He's going to Minnesota. So there's only a few jobs left. I think the Dolphins and the Saints and the Texans. I'm hoping they go ahead. Oh, in Jacksonville. I'm hoping they all go ahead and hire their people so they don't steal our fucking coordinators, especially if we win the Super Bowl. I know that our defensive coordinator, Lou Anarumo, interviewed for the Giants job, and our offensive coordinator, Brian Callahan, interviewed for the Broncos job. So hopefully that's all the interviews they get, because I would love for those two to come back next year.
And it was interesting. I was looking on the Twitter gimmick just before we started recording, and I noticed that Byron Leftwich, there's rumor running rampant that he is going to pull his name from the Jacksonville consideration for the Jacksonville job.
I won't blame him there.
No,
I'm a dumpster fire if I ever saw one.
Because I think given the current state of the Bucks, I can see him waiting because he's the OC at Tampa, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can see him waiting until Bruce Arians is gone and then take over that gig.
The one thing that you have to realize with some of these jobs is some owners are not good owners to work for. For instance, I'm not sure I would want to work in Miami. I'm not sure I'd want to work in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing I'll say for Mike Brown and the Bengals, he has a loyal son of a bitch to his coaches. I mean, we saw Marvin Lewis be there for 16 years. And Zach Taylor, people were calling for his head last year after he won six games in his first two seasons.
Right.
And Zach Taylor even said, if it wasn't for Mike Brown and the type of organization he runs, I wouldn't be here. A lot of teams would have already fired me.
Well, they would have canned him by now.
Yeah, there's something to be said for loyalty and believing in a guy that you hired and standing behind him. And I credit Mike Brown for that. I've been very hard on Mike Brown over the last 25 years. But, you know, sometimes things work out the way they're supposed to. And he said last year when people were wanting Zach Taylor fired, he said, we are very bullish on Zach Taylor. We believe in Zach Taylor. And I'm glad they did, because he's brought such a positive locker room. And I've never seen a team play as well together and as a unit and everyone supporting each other as I have with the Cincinnati Bengals this year. And you don't find that a lot in professional locker rooms, where sometimes guys are playing for their contracts or for next year signing somewhere else, you know, stuff like that. I don't see any of that with these Bengals. And I think that's the main reason why they went on the road to Nashville and Kansas City and beat some of these, you know, super teams that were supposed to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and it's also a lot of the things too we see with Buffalo too is like you see these dedicated GMs, Brandon Beam, and dedicated to the coaching staff, dedicated to the players, dedicated to the organization in general, as well as the fan base. It's one of those things where I give a lot of credit as I hit that microphone, but to Bengals fans across the board, not just because you're a Bengals fan, I'm saying in general, is it's very, very dedicated fans, similar to what the Bills Mafia is. And it's something in common that we both can really take losing fairly well too over the years.
It's cool to see the city react to all this too. For the last, since they've won, the whole city skyline has been lit up in orange. All the buildings and everything is orange every night. And it's just cool to see the whole city getting behind the Cincinnati Bengals. My brother and I went to the University of Cincinnati. The Bengals are practicing there this week because Cincinnati has a bubble indoor facility. The Bengals do not. They're the only team in the NFL that doesn't have an indoor practice facility. But they went to the University of Cincinnati, and Joe Burrow is getting pictures taken with, you know, UC freshmen and some college kids there at the campus today, I saw on Twitter. So it's just cool to see, you know, everyone responding and having a good time with this, because it's been such a long time since we've seen anything like this. We haven't even won a playoff game since 1991, let alone win three and go to the Super Bowl. So super excited and excited to talk about some WCW 1998 today.
Yeah, we're getting back on the WCW train here this week, we're leading up to Super Brawl 8 in 1998, here in February of 98 here. We're going to first start with the February 2nd edition of Monday Nitro, And then next week, just precursor, we're going to be going over our first Thunder, Justin, which is going to be will be fairly interesting. I've already partook, if you will, in that Thunder that we're going to be taking a look at next week. But with that being said, we're talking about this week. So let's head up to Mr. Rich Palladino right now.
It's the opening contest.
All right, Justin, so we are coming to you live from the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas, which ironically enough, almost a year to year before this, they had a Royal Rumble at the same building, believe it or not,
in 97. Steve Austin stole from the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Hitman Hart.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Diesel. My bad.
Fake Diesel?
Either way. So we are, like I said, we're at the Alamo Dome here. Our current heavyweight champion is vacant right now. Case in point, we're going to be talking about that into this episode going forward to the end of the month to Super Brawl. So we have DDP as your current U.S. champion. The Outsiders are your current tag champions. Booker T is your current television champion. And your current Cruiserweight champion is the one, the only, the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla, Mr. Chris Jericho. So, hour one, Justin, we got Tony, Mike, Tanay, and Larry Zbysko on commentary. And everybody seems to be Denim Dans here.
They're in their Canadian, like they're in their Canadian tuxedos. Yeah, I know. That's the first thing I wrote down was like, everyone's in denim. This is so 1998 right now.
Oh, it's got to be. And it's like, you know...
Tony Schiavone still has that.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he still has it. And he'll probably be giving it away to a lucky loyal top guy or top gal or low key big hog at the next Top Guy weekend. So just interesting side note is this is the second biggest crowd to date for WCW. The Georgia Dome show that was on the 5th of January, 98, did a few thousand more than this. But this was at the Georgia Dome was at 21,213 with 20,005 paid. This show, that we're talking about tonight. So it goes to show you 98's still pretty hot. Like you said last week,
yeah,
is 98. You said, you know, everybody could credit it Starrcade 97 with really jumping the shark for WCW and really downward trend. But as you can tell, we're in February of 98 and it's still going hot.
98 as a kid, you know, and I'm in eighth grade, going into ninth grade there over the summer. This is when I remember seeing WCW merchandise a lot, sure, out in stores, seeing WCW magazine everywhere, seeing WCW toys, Nintendo 64 games. This is when they started to really sell things, and including tickets and pay-per-views. Yeah, we might be seeing what we consider the downward slide into 99 and 2000, but they were still strong all the way through 98. I mean, That's why I don't buy that whole bullshit gimmick about how Starrcade 97 was the beginning of the end. I just don't think that.
Well, it was also a lot of people that credited that with a lot of the dirt sheets, a lot of that bullshit we hear from Alvarez, as well as Meltzer and all that crap. And certain, you can believe certain parts of it, but for the most part, it's basically hot garbage. But something that wasn't hot garbage that was not hot garbage was a Nitro Grill. So they're out here, footage over at UTC last week. So they're really playing with fire.
The Nitro Girls are at University of Texas Christian.
Yeah, think about that for a minute.
I heard Godfather and his hoes were coming over to Texas Christian the next week.
That's next week. It's like you get on that little I don't even know what the hell they call it. You go to at the church or something. You put it on the letter thing, the billboard or whatever. Today, yeah. WCW. Tomorrow, Godfather and their hoes. But you know, time and time again, whether you've listened to 83 weeks or you know about Eric Bischoff, is he starts each episode pretty much hot with some cruiserweight action. And we're going to get that right here with like Psychosis and Juventud Guerrera. This is the first time that Hoovy Juice appears on the back of Guerrera's tights, which he's really marketing himself pretty well here, I think. And
98 is the time that Hoovy starts really getting over, in 97, he was a solid cruiserweight.
And now he's even going up that next level.
Yeah. Yeah. 98 was the year of Hoovy.
And we'll see him start feuding here with Jericho too, going forward, within the next few weeks and heading to a Super Brawl. But it's just, something that you think that they'd work together enough, but it's just kind of like an awkward start because Juventud is trying to ground Psychosis and all that stuff. And it just doesn't gel with me. When you're thinking Psychosis, you're thinking Juventud Guerrera, they're high flying. They're not going to be your mat based wrestling. Maybe that's something that they're trying to do. Differentiate. I can't freaking talk this week. I seriously cannot do shit this week. Try to be different than every other cruiserweight on the roster and do that. And they might well have done that. But it just doesn't, it didn't gel with me. I don't know about you watching this.
I didn't mind the match. I thought it was a solid opener. I don't know that I noticed that as much. I did notice Psychosis, who usually was in black, was in all white, which is kind of cool. I kind of like that. Yeah, overall, hell, I thought the finish, that 450 splash, man, that thing is awesome. How you get it takes me, I don't know that I could ever do a 450 splash on a trampoline even, but doing it off the top turnbuckle, just when you don't have a lot of room to get down and get all that in, takes an extreme amount of athleticism. Two of these guys though were two of my favorite guys back then. Psychosis doesn't get enough props for how good he was, because for all these opening matches to get guys like Rey Mysterio and Juventud and all these guys over, there has to be that guy like Psychosis that can put him over. Mm-hmm. And he can, and he does it here real well.
Well, and it's just, they work together. They're young. They've worked together in Mexico or wherever, where they go to Japan or different promotions. And they just work so well together. But I wanted to see, I know you mentioned that with this finish here, the 450 splash, but do you remember the last time you were able to do a 450 splash? And why was that not on a trampoline?
I do not. I don't think it's ever happened. I couldn't even do a backflip on the trampoline. That's how farm boy I was back in the day.
Well, even now I'm like, I'll end up like breaking my neck or something. We got a trampoline out back here for Gavin. It's just like, daddy, he's like, daddy, do a flip. I'm like, bud, I have to go to work tomorrow. I cannot like hurt myself. And
I can do a front flip all day. I can do a front flip all day, but yeah. I am going backwards.
I can barely do a front flip. I am so, I am not very
back in the day when me and my brother wrestled on the trampoline after school, I was more of a mat wrestler. I wasn't high flying even on the trampoline.
Well,
I was slapping on figure fours and sharpshooters.
Right.
To my 9-year old brother. And luckily I didn't break any of his bones.
Well, that has something. Well,
I did power bomb my sister through my mom and dad's bed and broke it. And I caught a little heat for that though.
Why did she say Shawn Michaels was better than Bret Hart?
Who knows why? I had to babysit my brother and sister after school every day until my parents got home a couple hours later. So I'm sure she pissed me off in some which way. Probably turned the TV to some bullshit she wanted to watch when I was trying to watch TRL. God damn it.
Probably like Little House on the Prairie or something, you know?
Oh, who knows? I don't even remember what bullshit kids programs were going on back then.
What, 98? Yeah. 98? I'm trying to think on what the hell.
Power Rangers was on its way out. And I don't think my sister would have watched that much.
It was probably on something Nickelodeon, like Hidden Temple or that was at night, though. Rugrats, yeah. Rugrats. Oh, what was it called? Rocket Time?
No.
It was on Nickelodeon.
I remember Doug.
Oh, Doug's a classic, but no, it was like a skateboarding kids and stuff. It was, I thought it was interesting. Maybe it wasn't called Rocket Time. And you know, somebody let us know. Money Mike or somebody else get on that.
I know Rocket Man. And apparently our boy lawyer, Michael Amend, went and saw the great Elton John last week.
I heard about that.
That's a hell of a concert to see.
We had a nice little Zoom over on Royal Rumble Saturday last week. I had the opportunity to be in a Zoom with Mr. Mend himself and Mr. Pyrus.
I caught heat from Michael Mend last week for saying that he's a pussy and that he would lose to one. He would lose a triple threat match to Mike Dawkins and Stephen P. New.
Well, with all due respect, and I stuck up for you when I was in there. I said, look, Justin doesn't know what he's saying. Sometimes he thinks he's Bret Hart going over Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania. You know, he doesn't know what he says sometimes. So you have to accept his apology. Listen, for that.
Michael Oman is a loser, just like his Cowboys. And if I were to fight,
see that which Cowboys is Oklahoma Cowboys? State Cowboys?
Well, both. Because my
Bearcats, he's the Sooner fan, isn't he?
I don't know. I know he lives in Oklahoma, but he's from Dallas and he cheers for the Cowgirls. So obviously he's a loser. So what I would do, he is taller than me, and I would just pull the Bret Hart strategy. I would take out his knees, work on the knee, and then just wrap those little legs up in the figure four and snap them like a twig, or in the sharpshooter.
Yeah, but see the problem. See what the problem with that though is? He can still put you in jail though. He doesn't need legs to be a lawyer.
Oh no, I'm gonna have.
He can wheel his ass in there in the goddamn wheelchair and freaking sue your ass. No, you realize that, right?
I'm gonna have him sign a release before we go into battle.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes it all better. What are you fucking nuts? Jesus Christ! I'm like. I don't want to get a cease and desist order at my house either. I have no idea who you are, where you came from, if that happens. No, I'm joking, of course. And we got off in the weeds a little bit. Thank you for that. Shout out to Mr. Michael.
I feel Amend. Like Mike Dawkins would put Michael Amend in the torture rack.
Dude, Mike Dawkins will put Michael Amend in a fucking pretzel. Have you seen him recently? He is fucking jacked.
Yes. He was jacked when I saw him. Wherever I saw him.
Top guy, right?
Or Jacksonville, even before Top Guy. I don't.
Oh, right.
I saw him in Jacksonville. I hung out with him in Jacksonville at, I think, like a Dave and Buster's. We were hanging out, and he looked huge in.
Yeah, but he couldn't be a nicer dude, though. Seriously, you go up to him, say hello, and, you know, how are you, and all that good stuff. He's definitely, and he's been fucking busier than hell getting all those trademarks for those AEW wrestlers, superstars. But anyways, I wanted to talk about one other thing is with this match, and we'll move on, is were the fans quiet just because they didn't know what they were seeing in this Juventud and Psicosis match? Or were they, obviously in 98, you would think they'd know by now.
Yeah, but Psicosis really wasn't over. He was kind of like known as a jobber at the time. So
really, you thought Psicosis was a jobber?
A little bit, because he was always kind of the guy losing to like Ray and...
Oh,
you know, Eddie and all these guys. And so I don't know. That's why I figured the crowd probably just felt like, oh, who is going to win? You know?
No, I get that. I get that. But it was just something that I noticed and I'm like, okay, I gotta get something.
Psicosis something did start to get a little bit of a push later on this year, I think. I mean, where he would start winning some matches.
Right. But they're going to start promoting the Super Brawl 8, Sting versus Hogan, after the title was vacated due to circumstances surrounding the match. A rematch was ordered for December 29th, 1997, edition of WCW Nitro. And after that match, officially a no contest. And after that match, it was officially ruled a no contest and again ended with controversy surrounding its conclusion. And then WCW Executive Committee Chairman James Day Dillon. Yes.
James J. Dillon?
What did I say?
I think you said James Day Dillon. I don't know.
James J. You're... Dillon. I'm all fine. Dude, seriously, it's got to be work. I am all messed up. And I've only
We'll come worked... back next week, everyone. We'll just go ahead and close
Yeah, we're just going to stop now because there's no sense in me going forward. It's only going to get worse from here. But he announced on the premiere episode of WCW Thunder on January 8th, 1998, that the title was being held up pending a solution. So obviously they came up with that solution, hence the Sting and Hogan match at Super Brawl 8.
See, I don't like that. We had it
at Starrcade last year.
But we've already had another match between the two of them, right? After that?
After Super Brawl?
After Starrcade.
Did yeah, they have we had one? It on Nitro.
Okay, so now we're going to have a third match. Like, how fucking long are we going to let these two wrestle for it? If you're going to put the title up, why don't you have a little tournament or something for it?
You would think.
Make something fun out of it.
But I just don't think that they knew what the hell they had on their roster. I really don't think so. Because if that was the case, they would have had that tournament.
Even have like a fatal four-way match for it or something where it's just not Sting and Hogan again.
Yeah, but you go out there with guys that could put fans in the stands, man. And believe it or not, we'll see that at Super Brawl. But
well,
the audiences are there, man. They're buying it, though. So it's something's got to be working.
Sting and Hogan are no Flair Steamboat for a trilogy.
Well, nobody's Flair Steamboat, though.
Now, well, I'm just saying, how much can you do with this match? You know, like how much?
Throw him in a cage.
Yeah.
That's about it. At this time, there wasn't really anything else stipulation-wise that you could put him in. These two guys aren't going on a fucking ladder. They're not going to have a submission match. I don't even think Hogan knows his fucking submission hold.
I think he would just scratch your back until you quit.
That's a hell of a move, though. That is like the most potent submission hold or move, mind you, is the back rake. Hey, I'd be tapping out. I don't want that done to me.
No.
So we're going to see the Nitro Girls yet again. And the Denim Dan trio of Tanae, Tony, and Larry are back. And Gene Okerlund's in the ring. Man, I love going over these WCWs because I get to see Gino. We both grew up with him in WWF. And going back and watching this 97, 98, and even later on until he left. But Gene and Bobby, they made wrestling.
Mm-hmm. And so he brings out, I loved, you know, can't put over Gene enough. But he brings out DDP. And now we're going to set up a DDP Benoit match for the U.S. title, which is a face-face match. But I like it. I think it's showing that DDP is even more of a face by saying, you know what? I think Benoit deserves this. I'm going to give him a shot. And I think it gets him more over with the fans.
Well, and that title match is coming up this next Thursday after this episode on Thunder.
And they're still, this is at a time where they're just starting Thunder. So they're trying to throw matches like that onto Thunder during Nitro, promote it during Nitro to get those watchers, those, you know, viewership over to Thunder. Mm-hmm. Which is a good plan. I would do the same thing.
Exactly. And Thunder at this time is a very new program that they want to get ratings for. And we'll talk about that next week. We're going to go over it. But Okerlund wants to know if DDP understands what he's doing by giving Benoit a title shot, considering that he's crippled men all over the planet, which is really putting Benoit over here. And Paige then says that Benoit not only deserves this shot, but he's one of those best up and coming wrestlers in the world. And he wants to see if Ben, and if he can make Benoit feel the bang, which we'll just let that simmer for a little bit. But DDP, man, we've talked about his feud in 97 with Savage, the feud of the year. According to multiple wrestling sources, as well as multiple wrestling fans in general as well. Really love that feud and two right here. But he's just so goddamn good at this time, man. Even 98, you don't really start to see him really dwindle for another year. Even if you can consider him dwindling down there in 99 and 2000, obviously, then.
He is one of the most over people in the company right now, which is what I like. What they're doing here, they're giving that DDP rub to Benoit, mm-hmm. you know, and it helps Benoit because now you see after this, you see Benoit go into that best of seven matchup thing with Booker T. And then in 99, you see Benoit take another step up to where he's getting world title matches and winning the championship by the end of 99. So, you know, this is starting that upward trend for Benoit. And he's getting that DDP rep because DDP is probably their, other than maybe Sting, their most over baby face right now.
Yeah, and I think he's just and DDP's really turning into the face of WCW. He really is, even more so now than he did last year. Like I said with his feud with Savage, he's even doing it more. It's even more so now. To me, mm-hmm. Like I said, I don't know. Other people may feel differently, but after this in-ring interview, Cervani announces that they have upped the ante of the Jackknife Powerbomb fees. WCW will now fine anybody, Kevin Nash or otherwise, $15,000. Excuse me.
$150,000.
Excuse me. I read that wrong. It's right on my notes, but I said it wrong. If the move is performed. So basically the thought, what's going into this is basically Kevin Nash almost crippled Paul White.
Yeah.
With a powerbomb.
Dropped him on his head.
And they're using it as an angle, which I, to me, is brilliant.
It
is. Because you created a whole feud out of it.
Mm-hmm. No, it's good. And then they're wrapping this fine angle on Kevin Nash. And, of course, Kevin Nash says, fuck it, I'm going to do it anyways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a good little angle. But, yeah, they show that botched jackknife on Paul White. It sold out. And it could have been real bad. When you got, you know, 400 pounds coming down on your neck and shoulders like that, on your head, that ain't good. But luckily, Paul White, you know, was just such a big, thick son bitch that it, you know, didn't hurt him too bad.
Right, right. So we're going to get our next match coming up here, which will be the Ultimate Dragon taking on Billy Kidman with Lodi. And, dude, I don't want to give too much time to this, but how good was fucking Ultimate Dragon, man? It's awesome. Just, he didn't really get the just due. Just that Dragon Sleeper is just such an underrated finisher where you could basically put it on anybody, anywhere, anytime. And similar to what the Cruiserweight match at the beginning of the show, the crowd was pretty much fucking dead for this again. And it's just like, what the hell's going on? Kidman. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, we're used to seeing Ultimo in like his teal or pink. He's in all red here, which I thought was kind of cool. Kidman, you know, he's another one that's starting. He's at the very bottom of his build, but he's starting to get kind of that push out of the flock. You know, him and Saturn are starting to become those other guys that are building up through there. I think the flock was a good starter for a couple of these guys like Saturn and Kidman. Without it, you know, they may not have got over so much.
Do you think they were pushing Kidman solely, or do you think they were pushing the flock and Kidman was just that guy to get him over?
Well, he's there's only about three workers in the flock, right?
I understand that, but are they trying to push the flock and Kidman is just the best worker out of them, or do you think they're just pushing Kidman?
I think they're pushing the flock because almost every week of Nitro, you see the flock coming down as a group, sitting in the stands. The flock is a big thing, and even Raven, you know, is a big storyline here. But now Kidman and Saturn are starting to suckle off those teats of the flock here, getting the push with them. And, you know, I think it's good. I always loved Billy Kidman, man, as a worker. Yeah. Loved him.
Yeah.
And Ultimo. So this match was good. I didn't have any problems with this match at all.
Yeah, so I'm just going to go over quickly and just let you know what's going on in these next few matches, just because we're a 3-hour show here and these matches are 5 minutes and under. I want to give some more time to the main event here in hour three. So I'm just going to run down what we're going to see here for the next couple matches. Our next match after this, this match here is kicking off number hour two, the Cruiserweight title match, Chris Jericho defeating Super Callow by submission with the Lion Tamer in 5 minutes. We're going to see the television champion, Booker T, taking on Steven Regal. Booker T going over. Booker T, man, getting pushed to the moon with this TV title here, man.
Yeah, we're, like I said, getting ready to see, you know, I think him and Benoit's best of seven series. Yep. And then he also fights Rick Martel later on in the year, and Rick Martel becomes the TV champion. I love me some Rick Martel.
You can't go wrong with Rick Martel.
So, yeah, the TV championship, I think, got a little bit legitimized and fun during 98 because you had guys like, you know, Booker T and Benoit, and I don't know if Benoit was a TV champion, but
no, Disco. I hate to give him credit to Disco, but Disco was a TV champion and he was getting over though.
And Rick Martel just comes in out of nowhere and wins it. It's like, what the hell?
What's going on here?
Yeah, but yeah, I Booker T was another one that was on the rise here in 98 big time. Mm-hmm. And if we're talking about over baby faces, you know, I go Sting, DDP, Booker T right now in WCW. Yeah. Because when he came out in this match, a lot of slapdicks in that crowd is raising the roof.
They were, though. It was the same thing. Mm-hmm. It was the same thing with him and DDP. They were over with the crowd, and that's obviously what you wanted to do. But something you didn't want to do is watch this next match, which is Hugh Morris taking on Conan, which was with Virgil. Or excuse me, not Virgil, Vincent. Fuck. God damn. He'll always be Virgil to me. Anyways, and I don't want to discredit them. It was just a crappy match. I don't think that they worked well together. Conan was by far the better worker out of the two, and that showed in this match. And speaking of a better worker out of the two, we saw Scott Hall take out Jim Neidhart. And in this aspect, we see Dusty Rhodes as part of the NWO, man. It was just so difficult to see.
Dusty Rhodes sucked in the NWO. I think that is a universal agreement on everyone. Even this promo that he came out and cut, Scott Hall come out and did his usual bullshit of taking his promo and all that. And then he gave it over to Dusty, and Dusty gave a shitty, shitty promo. And you don't see that very often out of the American Dream, baby.
No,
but he did. He was just, I don't know that he knew how to be a heel real well. Mm-hmm. And I know he was early on in his career with like Dick Murdoch or whatever back in the day. But I don't know, man. If you guys watch this and you want to see a weird ass Dusty promo, go watch this one, because it was not good in any which way. And Dusty was just not a fit in the NWO in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and another... These next two matches were absolutely horrendous, and a total of 2 minutes and 14 seconds for these two matches. Goldberg taking out Mark Starr, another jobber, and then Steve Mongo McMichael and Davey Boy Smith with a double count out. And the rubber match is going to happen at Super Brawl 8 with McMichael and Davey Boy, which Lord help us all.
Yeah, when Davey Boy debuts like the week before,
correct.
He comes in and calls out Steve McMichael for some reason. Or McMichael was doing a promo with Jimmy Jean, and Davey Boy comes out and he's like, you know, Davey Boy needs a big bone to chew on, and I think you're that bone. I'm like, why in the hell is he wanting to fight Steve McMichael of all? Here's what I don't understand. Mm-hmm. You've got Brett, you've got Jim, you've got Davey. First of all, you're not going to do shit with Jim Neidhart as a singles wrestler. You're just not.
Correct.
Davey Boy, obviously, they didn't know how or what to do with him. And really, same way with Brett. Why not just bring them all in as a fucking group? Put them three together. Sense. Build off the heat that the Hart Foundation just had in WWE 2 months ago. Put Davey and Jim as a tag team. Even though at this point, I don't think they had any tag teams. You know, just do something to put them all three together as a group, maybe, you know, trying to take on the NWO in some which way. I mean, you can have NWO tag teams fight them. I just don't know why they put like Neidhart separate, Bulldog separate. Now, they do have Bulldog come out and kind of save Neidhart from an ass kicking at the end of this Neidhart Hall match here. But I just don't know why you never really saw the three of them as a group. Especially as hot as the Hart Foundation just was, you know, just 5 months ago in WWE.
Well, they might have just been trying to figure out their own identity with WCW too, though.
There was none. There was none to figure out.
That's what I'm saying. They were maybe trying to find it. I don't know. But I agree with you on that, though. I really do.
Maybe even put Bulldog and Luger together, because they were tag team.
They were tag team in WWF.
Yeah. I just don't know. They just did nothing. I hated it. I hate this Davey Boy, Steve McMichael bullshit. Oh, speaking of Luger, we did pass over. Mean Gene did another interview, and he brings out Lex Luger. And guess what Lex Luger's wearing? Jeans and a denim cutoff shirt. I'm like, what the fuck? Is this the company attire? Canadian tuxedos we all got to wear?
Apparently.
I mean, holy shit.
Yeah, it's apparently that's the motto for WCW in 98. But hour three kicks off with Hollywood Hogan and Eric Bischoff heading to the ring to cut a little promo here that gives Kevin Nash a green light to hurt as many people as he wants with the Jackknife Parm, and that Hogan will cover the 50 grand a pop. So this was just too long. I served no purpose. And
it's, you know what also was too long? This whole fucking show. WCW, I think that's a downfall of WCW. Going to a three-hour Nitro. Why in the hell did you need that?
You didn't.
I don't know. And here's the thing. If you keep it at 2 hours, then you don't have to have as much of a talent roster where you've got everything spread out so thin. You're really just putting matches together to have matches. You're not building storylines. For instance, Jericho and Super Callo and, you know, Hugh Morris and Conan. You're not building anything out of these matches. You're just having fucking matches to have matches. And you know why you're doing that? Because you got to fill 3 hours with bullshit. Mm-hmm. So if you just stay at 2 hours, put the top guys in there, build storylines around each thing, you're in better shape. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. No, I get what you mean.
And then don't sign everybody and their brother to a contract like Louis fucking Spicoli and, you know, whoever else is on this card.
Yeah.
Goldberg versus Mark Starr. I've never even heard of Mark Starr, but I guess that's just a job match. Once again, why do we need to have a job match with Goldberg when we can be building a storyline?
WCW, man. You know, maybe this is that start of the downward turn, though. You know what I mean? That we talked about possibly, I mean, here.
The only match in this thing, there was really only two matches that was built around any type of storyline. And that was Nash and Bagwell versus the Steiner brothers, which we're getting ready to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
That the only storyline behind that was we're building the breakup of the Steiner brothers, but at least we're building something.
Yeah. Somebody that doesn't build anything is Disco Inferno, who loses to Raven in a Raven's Rule match. Raven is over, more over than here than Disco. 5-minute match, served no purpose as usual. So we're going to get to that. Kevin Nash and Bagwell taking on the Steiners. The Steiners are going to go over as they execute a great Frankensteiner on Bagwell
Scott
for three counts.
Scott does,
yeah.
And the big thing about this is, you know, beginning of the match, Tony says, you know, they've been having their issues, but it looks like, you know, they've squashed them, and here they come. And then we get to the end of the match, and Rick wants tagged in, and Scott just looks at him, turns around, and wins on his own. DiBiase and Rick Steiner are pissed off at Scott. They have an argument after the match. Scott leaves on his own. So obviously we're building to their breakup. Like I said, this is one of the few matches on this card that was actually building around a storyline.
Right. And even the next one here, too. Even though it was a smudge finish, we saw Sting taking on Randy Savage. It's really building up to that, more so the NWO versus Sting. We're not talking Hollywood Hogan. We're talking NWO.
Hogan's pissed at Savage at this point, so they're trying to slide Savage out of the NWO.
Right. And it's just continuing that feud. And I just wanted to see what your thoughts were on this Luger and Sting team. Because it just didn't seem like it matched very well.
They always like to put those two together. They had put them together in 96. In 96, they were tag team champions because they owned a gym together. That's WCW logic right there.
Well, I get that, but it's just like, why? They're better apart, I think, to me. But I said,
they're also kind of original WCW guys, I guess. I don't know. I liked the match because, you know, my boy, the Macho Man, was in the match. Got Miss Elizabeth with me. Yeah. So anytime I get to see Randy, I love it. But it was weird seeing Sting in his attire here. It's just all black and plain. There's no white scorpion on it or
not
nothing.
Yet.
It's just a black plain singlet. I think before he did have that on there. I don't remember him being in just plain black like he wasn't here on this Nitro. I don't know where that come from. It was kind of weird to see. But, you know, overall, it was a good main event. I mean, Sting and Randy Savage is a good main event.
It's a good main event wherever, whenever, you know?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. But you got, once again, a big run in at the end and all this shit. But Hogan comes out and he's pissed at Savage. He starts slapping him around a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know. It was okay for what it was. I didn't hate the ending.
But it would have served a purpose, though. Continue that feud with Sting and Hogan. And then it also planted a possible feud with Hogan and Savage going forward, too. So are we going to see? We know we're going to see Sting and Hogan at Super Bowl. But what are we going to do with Savage? Is Savage going to be in the match? Who knows? Is it going to be a triple threat match for the title? We don't know.
And one thing I do know
a seed for that.
Is Mach is going to win the belt later on this year, right? 98.
Correct.
I love that.
So it's planting that seed potentially, but we don't know if he's going to be thrusted into the title scene, the title match, at Super Brawl 8. So yeah, we'll see. But somebody that definitely deserves a heavyweight title is Mr. Rich Palladino. So let's send it up to the ring to him now.
It's listener questions.
All right, Justin. So we got a couple new comments we got from last week from Brad. So he wanted to get in on the action first.
Brad Stanton, that is.
So Mr. Brad Stanton, you, sir, have the first question this week. So Brad's question is, so Billy Kidman's character was a homeless heroin addict right away. I kid you not. I'm reading it word for word. I shit you not. Right away, I say, you can't do this today. Well, no shit. However, he was not a likable character. So I'm asking, do you think something like this could work as long as the character is not a fan favorite? What I mean is there was nothing cool here. Excuse me. What I mean is there was nothing cool here. So I don't think kids would want to be him. I'm a good sayer of words this week. I apologize, everybody listening to this right now.
Do you want me just to read the questions from here?
Seriously, I swear to God, I'm really still on vacation, man. Seriously. I swear to God, I really do apologize. I am a freaking drizzling shits.
I looked at his character as like I always looked at the flock as kind of like grunge kids, you know?
Right.
I don't know if I ever looked at him as a homeless heroin addict, but I do like the description, Brad. I think that's probably pretty spot on. Do I think that character could work today? Yeah, in a way, maybe in a different way, you know what I mean? Like a little different aspect on it. But yeah, I think it could work as long as you're not doing something like they did with, you know, Jeff Hardy or Jake the Snake Roberts, where they're talking about they're building on those people's own personal struggles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if this is someone that's never struggled with addiction and they're going to put a gimmick on them like that, I can see that maybe being okay. I don't think it's good to exploit someone's own personal situation like they've done in the past.
Right.
WWE would never do it though. About that, Brad, if you're asking about that, WWE wouldn't, because they're going back to 1990 and trying to, you know, play to the kids and tell kids to eat their vitamins and say their prayers. It looks like anymore.
I think they're trying to I think the flock was an extension of that grunge character that Raven was playing.
Yeah,
because if you listen to DDP's a podcast there with Jake the Snake Roberts, he mentioned that is him and Raven were fairly close earlier on, and they very well could be, but he basically gave him that idea of nobody is that type of character, playing off that Nirvana-esque grunge character.
Yeah.
And you see that in The Flock. Mm-hmm. And that's why I liked it.
Yeah, I did too. Now, WWE has shined up some nefarious characters in the past. For instance, the Repo Man was a person that committed Grand Theft Auto on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they did that back in the day when they were still being, you know, good boys and girls with their characters. So I think there is a way that they could do it, especially AEW. I mean, AEW even kind of went with the drunk thing with Hangman Page there for a minute, which I thought was weird.
Yeah.
So I could see a group like AEW possibly doing that. But like I said, as long as it's not exploiting someone's personal problems, I can see someone trying to use such a character. Right. With a harder edge, though, as far as, I don't know. I've never heard Billy Kidman described as a homeless heroin addict, but I don't really know how to answer the question. Could I see it? Yes, I could with AEW in some which way, not in that specific way. I don't see it in WWE at all.
You could probably see that character as far as a, like that grunge character, that you won't see that homeless-esque character. But it was fairly interesting. I saw that come in and I'm like, man, Justin's going to have a field day with that opening comment. So thanks for that, Brad. And thanks for giving us a little chuckle there too. So our next question comes from our top gal. I didn't say top guy this week. Thank God, because she gave me hell. And I messaged her over as soon as the episode came out last Friday. I said, I apologize. I called you a top guy. I didn't mean it. I meant top gal. And I said top guy for whatever. But she's like, well, as long as you update your Wrestling With Music rankings, we'll be okay. And I knew that was where she was going.
She may not be a top guy, but she could probably kick the shit out of some top guys like Lil Jimmy Sorensen and some others. So don't fuck with Amy just because she's a top gal.
Coming soon to Top Guy Weekend, Amy versus the world.
She'll cut your ass verbally and maybe even physically. You never know.
She is from Kentucky, so you never know with those Kentucky gals, you know.
In a small town in Kentucky. I told her every fucking Dateline I watch, that's how most of them start right there.
Dude, that or some Halloween horror film or something, you know.
Yeah, and her husband Sean better hope he don't piss her off. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, right. he's living so far, so he's gotta be doing something right.
Amy's got that Jeff Jarrett gimmick going on. Don't piss her off. And we know from experience with the music list.
I think we pissed her off enough. So, but anyways, her question this week is,
she's got that sweet voice. She's got that sweet voice and she comes across all sweet. There's something in there.
You get some Mr. Woodford in her. She's like, do you ever see the one that flies over the cuckoo's nest?
She's also a mama, and those mamas, when you fuck with something that they love,
don't fuck with mama bear, man. No. Don't fuck with them. But anyways, her question is there any match on this Nitro that you would think that you think should be placed or played differently? Maybe someone should or should not have won, or someone should have won clean. One match that came to mind on this was the main event with Sting and Savage. I really thought that somebody should have won clean. I was going back and forth and trying to figure out who should have won and who should have won clean. Does it make sense that Savage would have won? Yeah, most likely, because then that would kind of play on, okay, is he going to be added to the title match because he's having that feud with, well, quote unquote feud with Hogan. And we know Sting and Hogan are facing at Super Brawl 8 at the end of the month. So that could play into it too. Other than that, there wasn't really another match for me.
There's not a lot that you can do with these matches. I mean, Mark Starr should have beat Goldberg. We all know.
Well,
that.
That's without question.
You know, for me, if I had to pick one, I would say I could have put Kidman over Ultimo Dragon, because you're building that flock angle. You're building Kidman kind of a little bit. And I mean, Ultimo Dragon is great, but he's not someone that they ever just, you know, figured they're going to make him a main part of a storyline ever. Really? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was always having great matches and winning the, you know, cruiserweight title and stuff. But as far as angles go, I don't remember any big angles with Ultimo Dragon.
Right. No, I get that. He was more of, well, he was the angle, the major angles is when he came over with all the titles. That was your only real big angle.
Yeah.
But even it didn't last long.
I can see putting Kidman over there by, you know, the flock cheating so much way. Not killing Ultimo Dragon. You know what I mean?
Do something behind his back or something.
Yeah.
It makes sense, though.
That would be my pick there.
Yeah. So I'm actually
getting Mark Starr over Goldberg.
Well, that's given. That's a given. So I'm actually getting our producer in my ear right now. He has three this week? Three questions.
Oh, God. No. Don't tell
me. Are you sure? Hold on. Let me get Elijah. Elijah, are you sure? Do you advise this? Are you kidding me? You had one goddamn job, kid, and hit the button. You can't even do that this week. Whatever. So everybody's pissing me off. So I guess we're going to play, you know, we're going to go over to Money Mike's questions now.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talks.
Here comes the money. Money.
All right. So Mike's got three questions.
You know what I just thought about? The guy, Money Mike's music is Shane McMahon's music, who was just fired by his own dad.
Correct.
So does that mean I can fire Money Mike from asking questions now?
So we're going to put that out to a poll this week. After you listen to this episode, tweet at us at underscore ringside rant or at JD2040 with the hashtag. Fire Money Mike or hire Money Mike.
I'll slap the ban on him.
That is
ban.
Hashtag hire Money Mike or hashtag fire Money Mike. And make sure you tag yours truly at underscore ringside rant and at JD2040 in that tweet.
So these
this
questions
this
better
PSA
be good.
Is brought to you by the ringside rant.
These Thank questions better much. Be good, Money Mike, because your fucking career depends on it right here.
Emotional damage.
Your question asking career.
Oh my God, he's gonna kill us. Anyway, so his first question of three is, what were our thoughts on Chris Jericho in the cruiserweight division? Do you believe he already had the ability to be a main event star at this point in 1998?
I wouldn't say a main event star. I would say maybe like a U.S. title situation. I can see a great DDP Chris Jericho match at a pay-per-view for the U.S. title.
I would tend to agree with you on that aspect, but I also want to see him kind of ease his way into it, because I think we start to see what we would later then see in WCW before we made the jump to WWF, and then make from WWF to AEW. Ease him into the TV title.
Well, we're not him doing the list yet.
Right.
We're not to him having the fat guy with him as his bodyguard, Rufus.
Oh, yeah, Rufus.
So that builds his character and gives him a little more charisma. So we're not there yet, Mike. So I would say no is the answer. I'd say where he's at right now is good as the big cruiserweight heel, because Eddie's not here right now, right? Eddie got hurt, car wreck. So Eddie's not here. So that was your main heel in the cruiserweights. Now you don't have him, so you slide Jericho into that spot. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. We see it all the time at WWE. These guys just get thrusted into this. Ease his way into it. Give him the TD title. I'm not saying give it to him forever. Give him a couple runs with it here in 98. Ease his way into the U.S., and then just run rap shot all over the U.S. Have him beat DDP, Henning, Raven, all those guys that are getting that push, get them over there. And then eventually, we don't know. Obviously, we don't know what's happening with WCW here in 2000, 2001. You know, we don't know that he's going to be going up to the WWF in 2000, or excuse me, in 99. So we don't know that. But push him now, because you don't know what's going to happen in the future. That's just me. But you got to ease his way into it a little bit.
I just think with Eddie being out, it was just a natural spot for him to become like the main heel and the cruiserweight.
And that's one of those old adages in the business is you don't want to go out hurt because somebody else is going to take your spot. And Jericho was a perfect example of this. Malenko, Mysterio, all those guys that are kind of – Saturn is another one.
Unless you work for Vince McMahon and you lose your smile, you can come right back in your spot.
Well, right, but that's but none of these guys are boy toys. They're not sexy boys. Shout out to Frank Bruno. So it's ease his way into it. That's all I'm saying. So obviously, Money Mike knows we're huge Goldberg marks. So his next question is about Goldberg. He says, we see Goldberg on the card here. Which storyline do you believe was executed better and had a better payoff, the Crow Sting story or the Rise of Goldberg?
Crow Sting.
Originally, I was going to say Crow Sting. But if you look at it on the whole, the storyline with the Rise of Goldberg can be basically transmitted into entertainment.
Yeah, but what was that storyline? The storyline was he beat everybody a bunch of times in a row.
Correct.
I don't look at that as a genius storyline. I think that the Sting storyline is great with him taking all that time off and not wrestling, being mysterious, a mysterious baby face that you don't even know really whose side he's on or what he's doing. Then when he comes back, like he's dropping down out of the sky and saving DDP and pulling him back up. That was one of the coolest things that I've ever seen in wrestling. I just think the storyline of Sting is way better than I think the Goldberg storyline was almost lazy. It's like, oh, we'll just have him win every week. Okay.
When you're describing the Crow Sting, you basically described everything about yourself. You're mysterious. You can drop down from the ceiling and pull people back up.
I would fall down from the ceiling. I would not drop down and pull people back up.
But no, but see, my thought process. Here, hear me out. My thought process behind the Rise of Goldberg. Yes, it was basically beat everybody. I get that. Fine. I'll agree with you on that. But look at a Goldberg match, man. You see when he beats? Oh, no, I understand it. But seriously, though. You look at a Goldberg match at this time, 98, 99, he wins the title, he wins this, he wins that. Up until he gets freaking cattle prodded in the chest by the fucking Scott Hall, this guy was the most over wrestler.
I agree with that. Being over isn't necessarily a great storyline. It's just being over with the fans, and he was. I agree with that.
But I think that makes the storyline better when you're over with the fans.
I just think that if we're talking storyline, the Sting storyline to me was way better than the storyline of the streak. Sting was also extremely over.
Well, yeah, I'm not discrediting it in the Sting by any means. Don't get me wrong. I just think my thought process is with the Goldberg. You can do a lot more with that, but that's we can agree to disagree on that.
And you know I'm not picking Goldberg as the best of anything because he wasn't. So he can go fuck himself. Next question.
All right, then. So his next question is, what were your thoughts on William Regal, a.k.a. Steven Regal, in WCW? Does Regal fall into the Arn Anderson category of excellent technicians who were never world champions?
Yeah, I think so. Steven Regal, I mean, yeah, I think they're kind of similar in a way. I don't know that anyone looked at Arn Anderson and thought, God damn, he should be world champion. I don't think anyone ever looked at Steven Regal and said, oh, fuck, why ain't he the world champion? You know, people might have done that with Piper or, you know, some other guys that never won, Scott Hall. Uh-huh. I don't know that anyone did that with William Regal or Arn Anderson. Were they great technicians? Yes. Could they tell great stories in the ring? Yes. So I can see that. I can actually see that that kind of comparison between the two.
I just now, don't, what, I could have seen Arn Anderson as a heavyweight champion. I love Regal. Don't get me wrong. But I cannot see William Regal, Stephen Regal, as heavyweight champion.
Here's why I don't think either one of them should have been champion.
Arn Anderson and Regal, you mean?
Yeah. Do you think, let's say when Flair was gone, so in 91, 92.
Sure.
They put the belt on Arn Anderson. Okay. People are going to say, God damn, I got to buy a ticket. Did you, you know, Arn Anderson's the champion now. I don't think people are going to say that. And people would have never said that about William Regal either. I'm not taking anything away from either one of them.
Right.
I just don't know that they had that star power level to be world champions.
No, see, I disagree with you on that. And we very rarely disagree. If you've ever listened to the show, you know, we don't disagree. Right. But I think you can say that about Arn Anderson is, yeah, let's strap the rocket to this guy's back and take him to the moon in 91 and 92, because that's not something that most people will think that'll happen, because they are so accustomed to seeing Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. Ric Flair was a heavyweight champion. Arn Anderson was the mid-card guy that was the TV champion, the U.S. title, whatever. Strap their big goal to his waist. People are going to talk, man. People are going to go back to the 86, to 87, to 88, to 89.
Well,
and remember those days.
There's also a look aspect to it. Think about who they put the belt on. A guy like Lex Luger, a guy like Ron Simmons. Those guys look like big, strong world champions. And then this guy looks like my dad, who's getting ready to take me and my junior high friends to the fucking movies.
But you can relate to that, though. In 98, you want to have reality. You got up on the other channel. You have Austin as champion. You have The Rock as champion. You have Undertaker as champion. These big, tough, badass guys. You're telling me Arn Anderson, you can't convince the WCW fans. And obviously, things being what they were in 98, he wasn't in the best condition. But given the condition that he was in, that he would be in is a top guy. I say you strap the racket to him and take him as the big gold champion, the heavyweight champion. That's me, though.
Here's what they did in 92.
They or put 92, it on excuse Rick, me. That's what I meant. I'm sorry.
They put it on Rick Rude. Now, I can see that. Rick Rude looks like a big, tough, badass heel. I mean, Arn Anderson, like I said, I love Arn Anderson. I just don't see him as the world champion. I never did.
Yeah, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. I just think you're very, very wrong. That's just the way it is. But that's why we get along so well, Justin. See?
Okay.
I guess.
If you say so.
I guess. I don't know. I know. I don't know. That's gonna. Arn Anderson is a heavyweight champion. He'll always be a heavyweight champion in my eyes. All right, Justin. So it is now time for everyone's favorite segment. Monkeys, hit the button.
Let's get musical. Let me hear your body talk.
All right, Justin. So we are adding two more wrestling themes to our very growing list.
We've got a top 40 right now.
We're top 40 right now.
Like a Casey Kasem.
Yeah, right. It's unfortunate. Oh, man. We got to get Efren to do. I'm sure he can do a Casey Kasem voice. Can he? Right? I'm sure.
I'm probably.
Efren, if you're listening, I hope you are. DM Justin or myself and let us know if you can do a Casey Kasem voice.
I actually think that Pauly B can do a Casey Kasem voice.
I'm gonna tweet that out and see if anybody can do that. Who can do one? Anyway, so we had top 40. We're gonna go with the top 10. Nothing has changed. Top 10, but we haven't done it in a couple weeks, so I just want to make sure that everybody's made aware of it, Amy. Number one, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Number two, NWO. Three, Undertaker. Four, Bret Hart. Number five, Demolition. Number six, Harlem Heat. Number seven, Jake Roberts. Number eight, Ric Flair. Number nine, The Four Horsemen. And number 10, The Dusty Rhodes, baby. So, Justin, we'll start with yours this week. Who'd you... I know it's going to shock everybody. Shock and awe is what we're about here at the Ringside Rant. So, Justin, what What did you choose this week?
Well, I watched this show, and the whole time I was watching it, I was like, what song am I going to pick? Because there really wasn't a lot of songs that we haven't kind of covered and talked about. But this one we have not. And even though my boy, the GOAT, Bret the Hitman Hart, was not on this show, other than a promo from the week before or something like that that they played, his brother-in-law, the old rhino, Vince, you got any room for that rhino? Jim Neidhart was on this show. And just like in WWE, as Amy hates, Jim Neidhart came out to Bret Hart's music. And in this case, it's Bret Hart's first, because he had a couple, his first WCW song, which, go ahead and play it, and I'll talk about it afterwards.
I can't play it anymore. It's bugging the shit out of me.
All right. Now that I hear it again played by itself, I don't hate the part kind of in the middle. It's like the part I always hated is the opening when it goes. It sounds country. It sounds like a countrified version of Bret Hart's WWE music, which is shit, because as Bret Hart said to Vince McMahon in 1984, you know, Vince, I ain't no cowboy. And this just comes across as very country to me. And so I always hated it. And I'm sure part of it was like, it's not Bret's fucking, you know, real music. It's not Bret's music.
Fault.
Yeah, it just wasn't. I always loved Bret's WWE music, and it just was such, and I always wondered, I remember wondering, like, I wonder what kind of music they're going to give him. I can't wait to hear it. And then he comes out to this. I'm like, what the fuck? This sounds like, God, I don't know. Like, they just took Bret Hart's music and played it at the CMAs or something.
Holy shit.
So, yeah.
So that's, this can't be ranking well with you then, I'm assuming.
No.
Because I have an idea. I want to get your opinion on it before I say mine, because I don't want to insult the great Bret Hart.
I would put it. I think I would put it at 39, right above. Actually, I'd put it at 40, right in front of. Second to last in front of Hogan's WCW, the terrible American made.
I was actually going to be nice and put him above right under Disco Inferno, but I can get with second to last. Cause that was originally what I was going to say, is to put him that far down, but I'm like, maybe not.
Yeah. It just doesn't fit. It's just weird. And maybe it's just because I'm used to the WWF music.
Yeah.
Now that I just listened to it, I kind of could get into a little bit of it. I know where they're trying to go. And I got a feeling Jimmy Hart probably was all over this. I know where they're trying to go. They're trying to go with the kind of squealing guitars that Bret had. But just that twang at the beginning was just shits all. It makes the whole song bad.
Yeah. All right, Justin. So I went balls out with this pick for me anyways, for the rankings here with Wrestling with Music. I'm going balls out, man. I am going with the man himself, the Crow, Sting.
Mm-hmm.
right. I could listen to that forever, Justin, but I'm not going to force everybody to listen to that.
We're definitely going to disagree on this then. I know I'm going to catch heat on this. I always hated that fucking song. I know it fits the I know it fits the character okay. I hate it. It reminds me, I just feel like I'm going to someone's funeral when I hear that shit. And I don't know how you can get excited for a match when that fucking shit starts. I just always hated that music. I always did. I still do.
So I will strongly disagree.
Amy, send your hate tweets to ringside at ringside rant, not JD2040.
I will strongly disagree with everything you just said about the icon Sting, the Hall of Famer Sting, the 60-year-old man that will jump off the stage through a goddamn table. But he won't. He wouldn't do it at this point. Anyways, so this music fits the character of the Crow Sting. To the much chagrin of one JD Justin Davis, this is a banger of a song. It may not be as recognizable as some other music, but I still think it should rank fairly high.
I think you're crazier than fuck.
Well, I figured that was a given.
Who in the hell are you going to put this over? I mean, honestly, you know where I thought I would put it? If I'm ranking this?
Sure.
Right behind Jim Ross at number 36.
Oh, go you can go. Go take a nosedive into the snowbank. God damn.
I don't know how this is a good song. Tweet us out if you guys, what you guys think. I just think it's a depressing song. It makes me want to jump off a bridge. Like, you know what? Life is sad.
Jesus Christ. Okay. I can go. Originally, I was going to go like top 20. Originally.
No way in hell. Well,
okay. Well, but how about right between Rick Rude and the Steiner Brothers WCW
can't do it. There's no fucking way that's better than Steiner Rise. I mean, come on.
Okay. How about
everybody loves Steiner Rise?
Okay. How about this? Right after Eddie Guerrero, WWE at number 30, right between Eddie Guerrero and JBL.
That's where my compromise was going to be.
Compromise? Right, I can compromise with that.
Right there. Right before you said where you were going to put it, I thought, okay, if I can't put it where I want, I might be able to slide it in behind Eddie Guerrero.
Okay. See, the ringside rant here, we're all about compromise.
Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. should learn from us, RJ.
Yeah, you know what? We should run for office. I will be your VP. You can be the president. You can deal with all that bullshit. I'll be the VP.
It's called getting a little bit of what you want and giving them a little bit of what they want.
So we are definitely going to give you what you want this week. Everybody out there in Ranters Nation, our ranter of the week this week is the man, the myth, the legend, the man that all the women want to be with, and men want to be. I almost fucked that up. I know I did. But
the women and the men want to be with.
Exactly.
Who we got?
Mr. Anthony Pyrus.
Oh, and my God.
You know me that I don't want to, you know, to give Anthony his props. But he is a nice guy.
He is. I will say this. Anthony Pyrus has been very supportive of my Bengals run through the playoffs, and of course he has seen plenty of Super Bowls, so it's nice that his team let one of us win one for once, or possibly or at least go to it. So Anthony, I hope you're doing well, and I'm sure this will be an interesting rant for sure.
But before we send it over to Anthony, we want to talk about next week we're going to be going over the February 12th, 1998 edition of WCW Thunder.
Our first ever Thunder.
Bingo, bango, bongo. So follow us at _ ringside rant or at JD2040 to submit your questions. DM one of us your questions for the Thunder episode.
Next week, we are going to be Thunderstruck. And Steinerized. Thunderstruck and Steinerized.
That could be a t-shirt. Anyways, so next week, send your questions over to us. Head over, follow us wherever you get your great podcasts. Head over, bookmark castbuy.com/ringside rant. You're going to have all our links for all our platforms, the networks we're on. Shout out to Full Press Coverage, Full Press Coverage, Shining Wizards Wrestling Network, as well as Wrestling and Genres for having us on your great networks. We're going to have our merchandise store over there at What a Maneuver. So big shout out to What a Maneuver. Big shout out to all you guys and gals there in Ranters Nation. We will see you next week right here on the Ringside Rant. Justin, it's become a tradition. Hopefully it will continue to bless the Cincinnati Bengals going forward. So, Justin, without further ado,
I'm going to wait to talk about that team that we're playing for next week because we still have a week to go. I don't want to jinx it. Okay. But I'm just going to say, Hooday, thank God to beat them Bengals. Go Bengals, baby, and we'll see you guys next week.
And enjoy our Ranter of the Week, the one, the only, thank God he's the only, Mr. Anthony Pyrus.
Hey, folks, Anthony Pyrus here with your Rant of the Week. Guys, I am getting so sick and tired of WWE's constant putting over these part-timers. No offense to Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey, but by God, if they had done half of their job over the last 20 years of getting some new guys ready to be top stars, getting some new guys and girls ready to be main event players, we wouldn't have to go back to the same old predictable crap that we have to endure year after year after year after year. Listen, take a look at Doudrop, Piper Niven, great talent. She goes out there, everyone knew she was going to be losing this one. Everybody knew because they don't push her properly and she's not looked at as a credible threat. So who the hell else is supposed to win the big Royal Rumble? Of course it's going to be a Ronda Rousey. Was there anybody else in that field? Hell, I called Ronda Rousey to win it before they even announced that she was going to be in it, as a surprise. And Lesnar, man, the same old tired troop over and over again. Why, right now, folks, right now, we should be getting ready for an exciting Cesaro versus Roman Reigns match for the Universal title. But of course, they've dropped the ball so many damn times on Cesaro. It's like Bill Buckner in 1986. It just makes me sick that these guys cannot and will not even attempt to make an effort to get these new stars, to get new stars over, to get guys over that men and women will gasp, pay money to see. Sick of it. It's my rant of the week. Have a good one.